Lecture 8, First Manassas, or Bull Run.
Following the Upper South secession and the transfer of the seat of the Confederate government from Montgomery, Alabama, to Richmond, Virginia, both sides sought to mobilize men and resources and to plot their military strategies. This lecture will examine Union planning in the late spring and early summer of 1861. We will then move on to consider the background and the conduct and the consequences of the Battle of First Manassas, or Bull Run, the first major military engagement of the war. But let's start by looking at the task that the North faced in trying to come up with a strategy that would force the wayward states back into the Union. And the key actor in the early consideration of this question will be Winfield Scott. Winfield Scott was in Washington, D.C. He was presiding as General-in-Chief of the United States Armies over the initial Union attempt to come up with a strategy to mobilize resources, and in the process he also was advising Abraham Lincoln, trying to bring the new president along, a president who had virtually no military experience and hadn't read much about the military. Scott was trying to run things in a military sense on the one hand, and to bring the new president along, bring him up to speed militarily on the other hand. Both sides, both Richmond and Washington, were concerned about maintaining the safety of the capital cities at this point. Jefferson Davis and his advisors were thinking about that in Richmond. And in Washington, there was great concern about the safety of the capital, and that started a pattern that would continue throughout the war. Congress always was worried about the safety of Washington, D.C., paid an inordinate amount of attention to it, really, and Lincoln, of course, had to be concerned about it as well. So that's going on. There's worry about the respective capitals and planning. In terms of overall strategy, I'll reiterate a point that I've made earlier, and that is the Confederacy had an easier task at this point. All it had to do was respond to whatever the North did. If the North, the United States, chose not to do anything, if it didn't invade the Confederacy would achieve its independence by default. It wouldn't have to fight for it at all. But the North, if it were going to reunite the Union, had to come up with a plan that would allow Union forces to strike into the South, defeat Confederate armies, and force the 11 seceding states to come back into the Union. Had to bring the Richmond government to its knees, in other words. And in the vortex of this planning in the North is Lieutenant General Winfield Scott. Scott is one of the great military figures in United States history, although he's not often thought of in those terms by students of the Civil War, because by the time of the war, he was a very old man. He was in his mid-70s, and he's often seen in caricature as someone who was well past his prime. That really isn't accurate. He had been in the Army a long time. Winfield Scott's service went all the way back to before the War of 1812. He'd been one of the great United States heroes in the War of 1812, an officer who had been innovative, who'd been a good leader in combat, and who had forged an exceptional record. He had towered over the military landscape of the Mexican War. He had conducted a campaign from Veracruz to Mexico City and captured the Mexican capital that ranks as one of the most brilliant campaigns in United States military history. The Duke of Wellington followed Scott's campaign very closely in Mexico and pronounced Scott to be the greatest soldier of the age. Scott also had had political ambitions. He was a Whig. He'd run as the Whig candidate for president in 1852. So he had been at the center of national affairs for many, many decades. And now he found himself, as I said before, the only soldier holding the rank that the sainted George Washington had held, found himself presiding over the early Union effort to begin this war successfully. In his mid-70s, as I said, an imposing man in his youth, he was 6 feet 5 inches tall, affected very showy uniforms, impressed people tremendously who saw him in his prime. Among those who saw him was a young Ulysses S. Grant, who reminisced after the war about a time when Winfield Scott visited the cadets at West Point. Grant wrote this about Scott. He said, "With his commanding figure and his quite colossal size and showy uniform, I thought him the finest specimen of manhood my eyes had ever beheld."